Welcome to the Star Coalition podcast. My name is Luke Kramer, Executive Director of the Star Coalition. So glad you're with us today. We love to sit down every now and then and talk with the greatest minds in advocacy and research or treatment of those living with central nervous system disorders such as schizophrenia, bipolar, depression, and other indications. And we are very excited to have a wonderful advocate with us today, Matthew Shapiro. He is the Associate Director of Public Affairs for NAMI New York State. The title is not long enough to really include all the incredible work that he does. It's just wonderful to watch the work that you do, Matthew, coming out of New York, and also your connection with a much larger national conversation around mental health advocacy. I know that as far as NAMI affiliates go or state chapters, New York State is really setting the bar, I believe, with some of the innovative work you guys are doing, some of the conversations we've had, your engagement with the legislature there in New York, and all the from public policy to stigma reduction to programming. NAMI New York State is doing some incredible stuff, and I really appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Oh, thank you so much, Luke. I appreciate the kind words, and it's a always a pleasure talking to you, and happy to do this.
Thank you. All right. Well, so I guess maybe just start off, why, for you personally, why did you get into mental health advocacy?
Well, I think mental health advocacy got into me. I think I've been a mental health advocate all my life, whether I liked it or not. You know, I was diagnosed very early, 3.5 years old, with ADHD, attention deficit hyperactive disorder. I was actually expelled from preschool for pushing a kid. And, you know, my mom said, was always my greatest advocate. And she said, you know, I know he's not a bad kid. He's not a mean kid. Something has to be going on in there. And really, she fought for services for me and to find out what was going on. And I was diagnosed very young, like I said, and that started a very long journey for me. Like, I think for most people who are in mental health recovery, it's a long and winding journey. And believe me, there were many times I didn't want to be an advocate. I didn't want to talk about my own mental health and my condition and feel different. I mean, I think one of the things that I talk about is a lot is when you're diagnosed that young, you always kind of feel like there's something different about you. And you know, that difference when you're young feels like it's something that you should be ashamed of or not talk about. And I spent many years, I think that early seed that was planted bloomed in a lot of bad ways throughout my life. So it's kind of ironic that I ended up at NAMI. It's not something I sought out, but it ended up being the greatest blessing in my life, because now I want to make sure that people don't suffer in silence and don't feel the way I felt for so long in my life. And then, you know, my story took a little bit of a different turn when I was 18 years old and my mom had a complete nervous breakdown and was diagnosed with, at the time, it was manic depression. And the diagnosis changed to bipolar disorder, bipolar 2, and now borderline personality disorder. So I became an advocate for my mom. So it's kind of a very symbiotic relationship in that way. But, you know, and I remember at that time, we didn't tell people why my mom wasn't in the house anymore or was staying with my grandparents. You know, we didn't really know what to tell people. And I'll never forget that feeling. And I want to make sure that individuals don't feel that way and families don't feel that way. So, you know, it's been the biggest blessing in my life, not only to find my own voice to advance my recovery, but to help others find their voice.
You know, that's a really, I think that you're striking a nerve, I'm sure, with a lot of people that are listening right now on a couple of levels. Number one, there are people that are afraid to open up and talk about their personal story. And sometimes there's reason. with either the stigma that may be associated with it. It could cause mm-hmm. issues at work, with family, what have you. So number one, maybe we'll start out with this. What was that moment where you felt, you know what, I do need to open up about my own story, and perhaps that can be the beginning point of a healing process for others? When did you make that decision, and how did you come about to that?
No, it's a great question. You know, it's kind of funny in a way. Even when I started at NAMI, so much of the NAMI culture has changed. I've been with NAMI since 2008. And at the time, it was still, I think, very family oriented. I think there was still a bit of a schism with, you know, I hate using the term consumers, but people with lived experience. And you know, people, you didn't feel, I felt comfortable talking about my mom's experience mm-hmm. and being a caretaker, but it took a few years and a bit of a culture change for me to talk about my own struggles and my own experiences. And, you know, I think once you start seeing people like, you know, Carlos and Amanda Lipp become active in NAMI, people with lived experiences, obviously, Karis Myrick, who was a past president living with schizophrenia, mm-hmm. once, you know, that arena broadened a little bit, and we encourage people to talk about their own struggles and not just those of their families, it really opened the door for me. And like most people, I use this analogy all the time. I think people want to talk about their own struggles, their own mental health issues, but for all the reasons you mentioned before, people don't. They feel like they're kind of caught behind the door. You open that door for them, people come flooding through. I think people have been held back for so long. Where you give them the platform to talk about it, people really are. And that's really exciting. And I was one of those people that once I saw that the door was open, I couldn't walk through it fast enough. And it's really changed so many things for my life. And I still have friends, you know, when I post things on social media or talk about my own struggles, I'll get private messages from people who wish they could be able to talk about, but they're afraid of the ramifications at work or with family or other things. So we still have a long way to go. We're making progress, but you know, we still have to help people open those doors.
I think that's it's a testament to you, and I think that I hope that others feel that they would have the strength and the courage to, if they so choose, to bring that up. And then you talk about, you know, your own family struggles. It's amazing when you work in this field, either through advocacy or treatment or research, whatever it may be, the number of people that really come out of the woodworks to say to you, hey, I want to tell you about my sister or tell you about what I'm going through, that it's amazing how many people are affected by...
Oh, yeah, I'll tell you, it really is a remarkable thing. And you really see, I mean, kind of a funny story, I think I told you this, when we were at the CNS Summit this year, where I was at the Star Coalition booth, and I had my you know, green ribbon pin on. And one of the servers who was going around with the hors d'oeuvres asked me, what is the green ribbon for? What's going on? I said, you know, it's for mental health awareness. And she said, like, you mean like schizophrenia? And I'm like, yeah, like schizophrenia. And she goes, well, my sister has schizophrenia. And I go, oh, really? And she was telling me a little bit about the problems that her parents are going through. And it turns out they were in Buffalo. The family in Western New York, and I gave her my card. I said, listen, your family needs support. You know, here's my card. Have them contact me, and they did. So that's just the latest situation. This is how, you know, I sometimes wear my Act for Mental Health button, and that started conversations. I think, like I said, people have been held back for so long about talking about this that they see any sort of opening to start these conversations, they jump at it. So that's really encouraging.
Well, let's talk about New York State in particular. Sure. New York State is obviously an extremely diverse state. I mean, you have both socioeconomic, you have ethnic, you know, racial, and then, you know, And when you look at socioeconomic, you also have different geographical areas that have pockets of different cultures, right? So obviously working within a state where you have both those who are extremely open and very willing to talk about mental health issues or brain disorders, you look on the other side of the spectrum, you have a lot of rural areas that where perhaps the stigma may be a little bit greater. What are some of the challenges that you've seen with the work that you've done within the state, and maybe how the transition of the conversation around mental health has evolved over the last decade or two?
Sure, no, definitely. So as you said, we are kind of a very diverse state in a lot of ways. We're a microcosm of the country. You know, in my position with NAMI, a statewide organization, I've got to travel to communities in all parts of the state, and they're definitely areas of New York that are very rural, like you said, that you feel like you're in, you know, middle America, real farmland, and then you're the biggest city in the world and everything in between. So it is really interesting. But a lot of the struggles are the same as far as not enough services. That's always the common denominator. You know, we're seeing the same sort of struggles to access services in interurban areas as you would in rural areas. So, that's certainly a challenge. And as like you said, the culture around the understanding of mental health issues is also a big barrier to overcome. And that's something we see in all communities too. In a lot of ethnic communities, we have a lot of people who are from the Caribbean culture, especially in New York City, and they have their own stigmas around mental health issues and not understanding. I mean, the Asian cultures, we're such a diverse state. I think every kind of community or ethnic group kind of has their own understanding of mental health issues and how they handle it. So that's, always a challenge. And obviously, like you said, in rural areas, not enough services. You know, we have a board member from a county called Delaware County in New York. And she always says, Delaware County is larger than the state of Rhode Island. There's a mental health clinic on one side of the county and a mental health clinic on the other side of the county. And in between, you have a lot of a real rural area, not the greatest roads. So accessing services is a real challenge, and you see that across the board in both the interurban and the rural areas. I think as you see it, a struggle for most people. But again, I do think we're making strides in introducing the conversations to new communities. One of the things that we're really excited about is we're going to begin offering programs in the Queensbridge Public Housing Facility, which is the biggest public housing complex in the country. And again, when working with the residents there, they talk about how this community has severe mental illness, severe trauma, socioeconomic trauma, and a lot of them don't even realize it.
Right.
So, and we were a little concerned about how this conversation would be welcomed in the community. And when we went down there and had a community fair, the response we got was one of the most overwhelming and really emotional experiences of my life. Here I am, I'm a big, I jokingly say kind of a doofy white guy going into an African-American community to talk about mental health. And I didn't know how it would be received, but we were received with such open arms. I think they were just so happy to see people who care and are concerned and are listening to them that it really was one of the most amazing experiences of my life.
What a beautiful story. And it really is amazing the more that we do engage our communities about mental health. We sometimes have the assumption that we will always be met with resistance, and it does happen at times. Mm-hmm. But it is amazing how in so many situations there is an overwhelming support and need for this. And the sheer joy, like you said, that people got from, oh my God, they're actually coming in, and this is something that we see as a huge gap. And like you said, maybe even intergenerational. There could be intergenerational trauma. There could be the socioeconomic, the trauma just around sometimes the violence and poverty that you may have in certain areas. And then how do we, kind of really come at to talking to different segments of our society about mental illness, whether it be law enforcement or veterans or our legislators or, you know, LGBTQ educators and so forth. You know, I noticed on your website you have some really great information about really how do we begin that dialogue with all different types of individuals. I know that you've been active in working with your state legislature. I know that many times public policy and laws can really dictate access to services, either emergency or long-term care for individuals living with mental illness. Maybe tell us quickly just about some of the stuff that you've done with your legislature and how do you see public policy in this discussion?
Well, I mean, public policy is so important to this discussion. I mean, we talk about just how there's not enough access, and we need to partner with our governments to expand mental health services. You know, we're lucky in New York with all the problems that we have. I think we're ahead of the curve in a lot of things. We have a very good state agency, the Office of Mental Health, that does a lot of great work, but you know, they're underfunded too, and they need advocates to explain why we need to invest in mental health and invest in these services. You know, obviously, that's what I'm telling our advocates all the time, that this upcoming election, I think, is the most important election of our time. And it's not really because of who's running, although that's obviously so important. It's because I think so many people are involved and are making their voices heard right now, whether it's on social media or, you know, in conversation. Just, it seems like everyone's tuned up and talking right now about everything. Hmm. And we as mental health advocates have to make sure that our voice can rise above the fray and get heard in everything that's being discussed right now. You know, when the pie isn't big enough to begin with, the way we talk about dividing that pie becomes so important, and to explain why we need services, whether it's, you know, inpatient beds, outpatient services, crisis services, you know, CIT teams, all these things that are necessary to deliver mental health care. And that starts with having a robust mental health workforce. One of the big things we're working on right now is making sure that the state supports the mental health workforce. You know, it's something we're really worried about, is that providers are hemorrhaging staff. The ability to hire and retain both knowledgeable and caring people to deliver mental health services is a huge challenge that has to be addressed, and something we're working on is, you know, a real major priority, making sure there's enough mental health housing for people. We know that, you know, especially when we're seeing a decrease in inpatient beds, mental health housing programs with wraparound services are really the safety net for this system. So they, in New York State, that system has been flat funded for 25 years. And due to inflation, these programs are operating at 43% of where they should be right now. So, you know, obviously these are programs that can help address homelessness, address suicide, address hospitalizations, all these things, entry into the criminal justice system, you know, all these things that we are trying to avoid can be done by proactively investing in programs that we know that will work. So that's always our message to the legislature, and looking to partner with the legislature. And luckily, we're so blessed in New York to just have a tremendous group of advocates who are willing to tell their story and explain how these programs have benefited them. Again, that's the most important thing that we try to really instill people, is share your story with your elected officials and explain how these programs have saved your life or saved the life of your loved one, and why we need to invest in these things. It's so important.
It all comes back down to having a voice. Having a voice in the system. And again, I encourage everyone who's listening today to go to NAMI New York State's website at www.naminys.org, NAMINYS.org. There you'll find a tremendous amount of resources. You know, I always say, Matthew, as we wrap up, if you got 100 great advocates together in the same room and gave them all a poster board and a marker and say, write what you think is important for our system and let's all go march to the Capitol, that every poster is going to be different. There are so many areas that need to be addressed. And the more people, like you said, that we can get involved and use their voice in all different areas of mental health care and advocacy, I think the more impact we can make in our society. But if we had a million Matthew Shapiros out there, I think that we could make great change in the world. And I do.
Well, no, we don't need a million Matthew Shapiros. We just need people who are willing to tell their story. And mm-hmm. It can be anybody. You know, we just introduced a bill, Nicole's Law. It's the first bill we've ever written from scratch, and I'm in New York State. And it came about because two people, Nicole's parents, the Attairs, and I give all the credit in the world to Roy and Lucille Attair mm-hmm. for telling their story about what led to their daughter's suicide and the mm-hmm. system failures that led to their daughter's suicide. And they're not doing it to ease their pain. They're doing it so others don't have to experience the same kind of pain they've had to withstand. And really, again, one family coming out and telling their story has led it to the introduction of legislation. You know, these are not trained lobbyists. These are people who have no experience working with the government, but they have the most powerful tool that any of us could have, and that's our story. And that's really what we encourage people to do it. All you need is your story. You're an expert in your own lived experience.
And you never know how far the ripples will travel. You never know what type of impact you're going to make on individuals. So again, Matthew, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. I know that you and I have talked for many hours, and we could sit here and talk for many more. But I want to thank you. Matthew Shapiro, again, is the Associate Director of Public Affairs for NAMI New York State, doing some incredible progressive work up in the state of New York. So thank you again for joining us, and thank you guys for joining on the Star Coalition podcast. We do love to get together with thought leaders like Matthew and others on mental health and brain disorders and other areas to discuss topics that really do affect all of us. So continue to follow the Star Coalition on social media and on our website at www.thestar.org, thestarr.org. Thank you again, Matthew, and we will see you guys soon.